You know, in this church, we have certainly been moving forward through the ages in an unbroken line. Think about it. Since 1683, this congregation has gathered with gifts of differing measure, yet hearts of one accord, and has indeed been manifold in service. Manifold is kind of one of those old-fashioned hymn words, meaning of many different parts and kinds. Manifold in service, but still one. Indeed, the parts of this church are, in fact, manifold. And therefore, we have many different kinds of expectations of this church. Think about the many, the manifold, if you will, roles that the church plays in our lives and in the lives of the community. On a personal level, we expect our church to be there when we're celebrating great moments in our life, weddings, child dedications. And we also expect it to be there for us when we lose a loved one, or when we're ill or struggling with the demands of life. We expect this church to help us rear our children to become fine adults. And we expect our church to help us connect to other people at a deeper level than we can in other places. We expect our church to be a place where we have good times with friends. We expect our church to be a place where music touches our souls and lifts our spirits, and where we can even be part of the music making. We expect our church to be a place where we learn, where we expand our minds, and we also expect it to be a place where we expand our hearts, a place where we are inspired to acts of love and kindness. We expect our church also to be a place that challenges us, even goads us to put our faith into action. We expect our church to provide us with opportunities to serve others, as well as being a place where we can experience the sacred spiritual side of life. But we expect much more of our church than just what it does for us individually or for our family. We also have the expectation that this church will reach out as a whole to the greater community. We take pride in the fact that our church has hosted the food pantry and the senior meal programs for our community, that we now even provide a free meal once a month to anyone who walks through our doors, and that we try to assist people who call on us for help in all kinds of ways and at all kinds of times. We expect our church to have a voice in the community and to stand up for what is right. And certainly, having the voice of liberal religion speak out is very important in this time when it seems that hate and prejudice have again gained momentum. We expect our church to welcome whoever wants to make this their spiritual home. And looking to the future, I think it's likely we will expect even more of this church because it is a thriving congregation where new ideas and programs are always on the horizon. I personally have great expectations for the future of this church. You know, we all have areas of the church that are perhaps more important to us than other areas. Maybe for you it's the programming for our children and youth, or the music, or maybe it's the pastoral care and counseling. Or maybe for you it's the sermon on Sunday. Maybe it's the social justice opportunities. All these are important and require resources, and they all fit together to make us who we are. You know, sometimes people will come forward and say something like, well, I want to support this particular project or that project, and that can be helpful. But sometimes I worry about that sort of contributing. Because the truth is, what makes all those programs possible is a strong institution to house them and maintain them in a greater context and among a broader and more diverse group of people than just their most ardent supporters. The well-being of the institution is critical to all those programs that are part of our mission, all those things that in different degrees and on different scales of priority, we expect of our church. After 15 years of ministry here, I think you know that I'm a social justice advocate. I think you know that creating meaningful Sunday morning worship is a priority for me. And you know that I, with the help of so many others, try to be there for folks in times of need and try to create meaningful rites of passage, whether it's a child dedication or a marriage or a memorial service. And I hope you know I'm committed to the engagement with and the empowerment of our children and youth and to the best music program possible. But above all else, I am an institutionalist. In my ministry here, I've tried always to make that the priority, because every one of our programs requires a strong institution. Oh, you can, and people do, say we shouldn't spend money on buildings, or volunteers can do this, we don't need a staff person for that. But in the long run, that tends to be short-sighted. And we've seen it here. There was a time when new people were really turned off by our church and told us so, because it looked so shabby and unkept. It didn't give the appearance of a thriving church. There have been times when volunteers who really lacked staff support and help got so overwhelmed and burdened that it really was just easier for them to leave the church, and they did. A thriving institution, as I believe we are, has the professional help it needs, it has the facilities it needs, and it takes care of them. Caring for the institution inspires people to new ideas as well as maintains old traditions. A healthy, well-supported institution is, in fact, fertile ground for new ideas, for deep connections, for shared responsibilities and leadership. A well-supported church institution is what it takes for our expectations, our hopes, and our dreams to become and to stay a reality. If you believe, as I do, in the importance of sustaining the institution, you probably know, as I do, that it requires our constant efforts and attention. You can't say, as we sort of once did, that, you know, well, we can just ignore the roof or get along well enough without professional staff or not really worry about if the building is being kept very clean. To do so is the beginning of the downward spiral. Oh, you know, you might be happy for a while, even if the building isn't clean, but you're gathering with friends in kind of a rundown space, but it's not costing as much. You might not even notice the poor condition of things, but I assure you that a new person coming through the door will, and it will discourage them from being part of us. You know, our institution has a face in the community. When I first came here, the paint on the church was peeling on three sides, I think, and the grass in front of the church was about 3 feet tall. One of the very first calls I received as minister here was an inquiry asking me if the building was for sale. But we have a very different face now. And I'm so happy that it's now a smiling face. Our institution speaks to the community of success. And as those folks in Chicago after this week could tell you, everyone wants to be part of a winning team. A healthy institution attracts diverse people. A healthy institution is a workshop for new ideas. A healthy institution is not satisfied with just the way it is now, but always has great expectations for what yet can be. You know, there really is no place for a church that's standing still and content to be just good enough. You might know that old saying that there's no such thing as standing still. You're either moving forward or going backwards. This month, our neighbors next door, the community church, the Blue Door Church, they're going to have their last worship service. The congregation is elderly, and they saw no future. They've merged with another church in Acton, and I wish them well. But I think about them and what happened there. And then I look at us, full of young families. My gosh, the 9 o'clock service is flowing with brand new families, as there are here. New people are here every week. And 5 or 6 different things are going on many nights of the week in our building. But folks, what happened to Union Church could have just as easily have happened to us if we had not done the things that are always needed to bring in new folks, meet the needs of members, and run with new ideas, provide opportunities for participation in so many spiritual endeavors, from social justice to music making. We have to be a place where there are always great expectations for what yet is to be, and a recognition that supporting our institution is critical to everything else that happens here. So how do I do it? It sounds like a pretty big effort. Well, first, we need to recognize that we all have a stake in this. Every one of us has a role. Every one of us needs to be committed to this mission. You know, we are really quite fortunate, and increasingly so, that this is a church with economic diversity, and more so every year. We have both people with substantial financial means and those who do not. And we know that everyone cannot make a large financial gift, but we also know some can very easily. We know there are some for whom this particular year is a tough one financially. Maybe you're unemployed or underemployed or have a couple of kids in college and are barely making the tuition bills. On the other hand, there are those who got a raise this year, made good money in the stock market, or are just at that point in life where the kids are on their own and there's more discretionary income. The beauty of a church like ours is that if everyone honestly pledges what is generous for them, be it $50 a year or $50,000, this institution can meet the needs not only of all its members and friends, but also have the resources necessary to reach out to the community and to welcome new folks. This year, you heard from Rick, the goal of the stewardship campaign is above all else to get 100% participation. And I want to talk with you about what that means. It simply means that every one of us is asked to fill out a pledge card and return it. And I want you to understand that it is okay if your response is that I'm not able to give anything this year, or I can only give just a few dollars. The simple fact that you respond to the campaign by filling out a pledge card tells us that we have your support at a spiritual level, that you believe in this institution, and that the important role it has in the community. It really tells us that you're on board. We have people in this church who live on $800 a month or less. Sometimes people are embarrassed because they can only give very little or nothing. Sometimes they feel uncomfortable at pledge time and avoid contact with the stewardship committee and don't return a pledge card. Please don't do that. The amount you pledge is held in confidence and will not be shared with others. The only thing we're going to publicly measure is the percentage of people who participate by returning a pledge card or by making a pledge online. We will count every card returned, whether there is a dollar pledge or not. The committee is going to have, I think, one of those thermometer charts, and we want to get it colored right to the top. So no matter what you're able to give, or even if you're not able to give at all, or just don't know what you can commit to and aren't ready to put that amount down, please fill out the card. It's a statement that you, in whatever way you can, support this institution and are part of the team. Sometimes people think that the stewardship sermon is more about business than spirituality. But the truth, I think, is really the opposite. You know, you notice we call this Generosity Sunday, and you know why? Because the cultivation of the spiritual practice of generosity is in fact fundamental to every one of the major faith traditions of the world. The Buddha put it this way: if you knew as I do the power of giving, you would not let a single meal pass without sharing some of it. But the Buddha wasn't alone, as the Reverend Lynn Unger points out. She writes, if you look at the Bible, both the Jewish and Christian scriptures, you will find that one verse in eight deals with the relationship between faith and how you use your money and possessions. Of the Ten Commandments, 10 provide instructions on how you should use your money and possessions. Of the 38 or so parables of Jesus, 16 deal with the relationship of what you say you believe and how you use your money and possessions. In fact, of everything that Jesus talks about, the number two topic is, guess what? The use of money and possessions. And Islam is no less bashful. In addressing the importance of generous giving, one of the five pillars or principles of Islam is called zakat, which is the requirement that every Muslim each year give away 2.5% of his or her total assets. Religion guides us in so many ways as to how to live our lives, but primary among their teachings is the importance of generosity to us, the giver, and of course, to the community and the recipient. One of the most important things a religion can teach us is the practice of growing a generous heart. One of my fairly recently retired colleagues, Tom Owen Toll, put it this way: the older I get, the more I realize that the primary religious quality is generosity. Giving liberally of our time, talent, and resources to those communities that bring us abundant life. I love that. It captures it totally for me. To me, a church that brings about abundant life is one that lives up to all those expectations that we talked about, those expectations that we all have of this place. That's why, even though I personally give to many charitable causes, the place where I make my largest contribution is to my church and my faith tradition. Because for me, that's the community that brings about abundant life. It is, as we said in our chalice lighting this morning, the cradle of our dreams, the workshop of our common endeavor, the place where we make all those expectations a reality. On this Generosity Sunday, it's important that we recognize not just the need of this church for our time and talent and money, but also the importance of cultivating the spiritual practice of generosity in our lives. What our stewardship campaign each year really asks of us is to honestly embrace the spiritual practice of generosity. I hope you will use what you have, your time, your talent, your treasure, to bless this community, and in doing so, truly bless yourself. In the words of Francis of Assisi, it is indeed in giving that we receive. What we ask of you is a thoughtful gift, one given with a generous heart. For some people, it's a lot of money. For others, especially those living on fixed income, it'll be much, much smaller. Yes, we need an increase over last year's budget because everything goes up and we to meet our expenses. So for those of you who are able to increase your pledge, I hope you will. But even if you're unable to contribute any money to this church, please fill out the card and know that by your presence and your service and commitment to this institution, you too are a good steward. You know, your role, your respect, the services you receive from this church do not have nor never will have any relationship to the money you're able to contribute. And whatever you do to do contribute is kept strictly confidential. You received a pledge card this morning. Some of you have already pledged. I thank you. If you've not, in a few minutes, there'll be an opportunity for you to fill out that card if you're ready to do so. And I know, for me, whenever I go through this, figuring out how to get much to give is never easy. Because I always have that inherent conflict that I think most of us do. On one hand, it's the amount that I would truly like to give when I think about nothing but how important the church is to me and the community. When I'm thinking about that, I'm not thinking about any of the other expenses, bills, mortgage, car payment, none of that. They're all far from my mind. And then clicks in the budget-minded me, the one who thinks, well, I have to carefully calculate what's left after I've paid all the other bills and bought all the other things I need to do, and then I can see how much I can contribute. But I've come to believe that neither of those methods is the way to determine what you should give. A generous gift does have to push us a bit and should not be just what's left over after you've spent it on everything else. But neither should it be a cause of great distress and require that other bills might go unpaid so you could fulfill a pledge. I hope you'll make a pledge that you can feel good about because it's simply truly generous for you. A pledge that tells the truth about who you are, a person with something to give, who's received abundantly and wants to give back, and who's connected to and cares about so many things larger than yourself, who wants to see us continue to meet all the expectations people have of this wonderful institution. So I invite you to take a moment to think on that, and if you are ready, to fill out the pledge cards that you are provided. This is the month when we focus on gratitude and reflect upon the things for which we are most grateful. I am so grateful for all the ways you contribute incredible amounts of time and talent and financial resources to this church. This Sunday is a time when I have the great privilege to express to you the thanks of this entire community, and even the thanks of those who will be our future community. I know that these gifts that you give come from your heart, that they're given in love, even with some sacrifice, and they express a great deal about who you are and what you care about. So in so many ways, we pledge ourselves anew, not just to financial contributions, but to greater service and greater love. We affirm our bonds to this institution and our oneness as a community. Our words of benediction come from Winston Churchill. We make a living by what we earn. We make a life by what we give away. A generous heart is the key to a life worth living. May we use our gifts to bless our community and the world.